everybody. Welcome to episode 167 of Rain Delay Radio. I'm your host today, Patrick, and today I am joined by Kevin. Kevin, what's going on, man?
Hey, how we doing, Pat? It's a beautiful Sunday, probably the best day of the year so far, 2024 weather-wise. Just gorgeous.
Awesome day. We had 70s today. It was gorgeous. Beautiful day. It's been a beautiful week. Cody finished his story last Sunday.
Yep, so, he sure did.
So happy. It's
to much fanfare. I will say, as not a general fan of the Fed, I think that was a really good WrestleMania in general. I was entertained as someone who hasn't been following the product and that much. So
that final, just a real quick talk wrestling.
Yes,
that final match really, the match between Cody and Roman really tied a lot of stuff together, and this was masterful long term storytelling. Because
absolutely. That Shield callback with Seth was just absolutely beautiful.
And, you know,
10 years later. 10 years.
That's why Roman lost and why Seth said, I'm suited to be your Shield in this match, because Roman could not let go of what Seth did to him.
Absolutely. He had an opportunity to take the chair to Cody. Instead, he turned around and bashed Seth,
and it cost him the title. And, you know, of course, John Cena showing up, you know, was awesome because he's got history with the Bloodline. Undertaker showing up was awesome because... Yep. You know, his two losses at WrestleMania were caused by Paul Heyman when he lost to Lesnar, and Roman Reigns was the other one. So
absolutely, it all made sense. I was glad they didn't just
made sense
nostalgia bomb for the sake of nostalgia bombing. They actually, you know, put it together the right way.
Pro wrestling is cool again, and I highly recommend everyone get back in if you've been a fan before.
Seriously, go do it. Even if you go watch AEW, go do that too. Just pro wrestling is cool.
Don't watch AEW. AEW sucks. Hey, anyways.
Shut up, Patrick. We're going to have a discussion for another time.
Oh, yeah.
Anyways.
Baseball time. So, boy, what a week.
What a week.
Where do we even begin? Because there's two huge stories, and then there's Angel Hernandez being Angel Hernandez. I think I'm going to start here with the Ippe Mizuhara stuff.
Okay.
Because, good Lord. So he turned himself over this week. He allegedly pilfered $16 million from Shohei Ohtani for his gambling addiction, his illegal sports betting addiction. He's supposed to enter a plea on May 9th. Oh, man. So, like, he had control of Shohei's bank account, was making unauthorized transfers from Shohei's bank account from November 2021 until January 2024. And then, not only that, he was literally pretending to be Shohei Ohtani on phone calls with banks.
The sheer volume of bets that this man was putting out was astronomical. Yeah. We're talking like averaging 3.5 bets per hour, every single hour for like 3 years in a row.
Yeah.
Like insane, absolutely bonkers. I mean,
what else
you start saying about this, right? So, I mean, it's been reported that many foreign players who have interpreters give them full access to their entire financial and private lives in order to set up bank accounts and do all the things that they can't do because of the language barrier. Obviously, this got extremely abused by Ippe himself and Shohei, regardless of what the reports are saying or not. This guy was close with him. He's been around since he joined the Angels when he first joined in, and, you know, and he's been a very, very integral, close part to Ohtani's life. So whether you want to believe the stories or not, I really don't know as far as whether Ohtani knew anything. But the fact that he had unprecedented access to that account is just mind-blowing to me. And I think that's what we see with all this money.
It's wild. Like, he took advantage of Shohei, and Shohei had no idea.
That's what, like, the reports are saying. And the fact that the feds came out in, 2 weeks? It didn't even take 2 weeks in order to have this entire thing almost, like, wrapped with a bow tie. It just makes me wonder, like, is it expedited to make it less of a distraction for Shohei?
It is wild that he chose to stop the gambling in January right after Shohei signed that contract and deferred basically all of the contract.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just horrible stuff. Hopefully this is the end of it.
So yeah,
hearing about
that's the question. Do we? I think it probably does. Once he goes to jail, regardless, I think it probably just stops. I mean, you'll have your Dodger haters that'll bring it up at nauseum.
They're gonna be idiots and say, "Oh no, Shohei got away with this."
Yeah, I don't think that it's gonna tarnish his reputation in the long run. It shouldn't. No,
it's disgusting if it's going to.
So. Yeah, it's just that word betting in baseball. You put those two together, and then it obviously conjures up images of Pete Rose and the white or the Black Sox and all of the other things that we have as far as a mark of stain on the league. So hopefully it stays that way.
Major League Baseball just advertises betting constantly.
Yeah, and it's only getting worse from here on out as far as sports betting in general. They should really look inwards at this too, and being like, I know these were illegal gambling sites that he was participating in, but the amount of DraftKings and all the other stuff that we're seeing on a regular basis, you know, you're just one legal state away from being able to blow your entire paycheck on a baseball game. I don't know if I can handle that or not.
No. Also, shout out Heyman for the tweet of the decade. He tweeted out, given everything we know, at least Ipe did not bet on baseball. So shout out John Heyman for the tweet of the decade, because that was just chef's kiss.
I mean, you gotta be able to have that in there. Otherwise, there's going to be a lifetime of questions. And hopefully that's not the case, because he's very important to baseball and for the image of baseball, and needs to be at the top, regardless of whether he's being protected because of that image. That's up for our listeners to debate, I suppose.
Yeah. So moving on from that, we have what is going on, sort of a epidemic in the pitching world, with just the amount of arm injuries to pitchers. Not Shohei Ohtani.
Well, I mean, he's had two Tommy Johns, so
he's had two Tommy Johns.
Kind of part of this conversation, I guess.
Spencer Strider this week underwent a Tommy John brace procedure. Yuri Perez has been lost to Tommy John. Bobby Miller is currently on the injured list. Shane Bieber. Nope. About to have Tommy John. It's not looking good. It's there was a list I saw. I have to find it, but like the hardest throwers, like the top 10 hardest throwers in baseball, 8 of them are currently out with Tommy John surgery.
Yep.
The only two that aren't, Hunter Green was one of them, and Grayson Rodriguez was the other.
Yep. And then you couple that with the chart that I saw that just shows the average rate of fastballs over the last, I don't know, 20 years or whatever it is. And it's just tick, 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 going up and up and up and up and up and up and up. And they're starting younger and younger and younger.
That begs the question, what can be done here? What can be done to prevent this? I don't know. I don't think the pitch clock is to blame. Everyone wants to blame the pitch clock.
Absolutely not. I think that was a knee-jerk reaction by the Players Association. I think that they just have this angsty opinion of themselves against Major League Baseball. And no matter what Major League Baseball says, they're going to take a counter opinion on it, especially if their players are suddenly to be blamed for this. They're like, no, it's the league's fault. It's not our fault. It's their fault. Yeah. So it's just a classic deflection of some sort, I think, from them.
I would say banning sticky stuff has definitely had an effect, because a lot of players relied on that. But I mean, the big thing is you're coming out here throwing 100, and I don't think a human body's meant to do that. Let's put this into perspective. A medical study I read, the ulnar collateral ligament, the UCL.
Yep.
I'm going to call it that because I'm not a nurse. You're
close. Ulnar collateral ligament. It's pretty much right. Yeah. Yeah.
It doesn't physically mature until you turn 25.
Yep.
And you've got all these young kids just pumping high 90s in high school just to even get noticed. Like, if you're a pitcher, you will not get noticed unless you're throwing 90 in high school.
There was a quote that just came out from Dr. James Andrews, the forefront doctor in this field. Yeah. And he goes, "We've learned in our research lab that baseball is a developmental sport. The Tommy John ligament matures about age 26. In high school, the red line where the forces go beyond tensile properties of the ligament is about 80 miles an hour. So if they have pressure from scouts, from coaches, from parents, from their peers that are all throwing above that, guess what? They're not going to take the caution to slow it down, because guess that's where they're going to get their notice. That's where they're going to get these prospects. These kids are signing younger and younger and younger, and the money is going higher and higher and higher. This problem is not going to go away at all. It's just not, because the motivation and the desire for these kids to get out of their situations or to create kind of this magical moment for themselves is going to result in them trying to push the limits of the body, and it's just not going to work. Right.
And you have also that, like, they're trying to put so many, like, all this spin on the pitches they're throwing. Like, it's rough on the arm. It's not good, man. Like, and I get it. Like, teams now care about velocity because it's harder for players to hit it. But, like, man.
I guess the question now becomes, we mentioned the union a little bit earlier. Do they get to a point where we threaten some sort of union action? Do we get to another strike situation where the next, collective bargain agreement, the pitch clock becomes under scrutiny again, under this idea of player safety? Whether it's real or not, I guess, is the question. Baseball loses hundreds of millions of dollars every single year because of pitcher injuries. That's just the way it has been. It probably will be for forever. It's just the reality of what happens when the human body does something it's not supposed to do. So I think this conversation probably is exacerbated based on the fact that we're, 14 days into the season, and we already have all of these made. Like, Spencer Strider was the far and away top starting pitcher and projected starting pitcher for this league for the season, and now he's gone. Like, it's generally going to ask these questions, and it's going to make us have this topic of discussion, because you don't want your number one, rotation guy out, and all you can explain is that his elbow exploded. Like, Tommy John is, like, that name is so synonymous with baseball, and for a reason. It's just because it's like, it seems that every good pitcher, whoever you are, is essentially going to run into it. And if you don't, you're an outlier and you're, an anomaly in that circumstance. So,
yeah. And, like, so we lost Bieber and Strider this week. Other players that were, having trouble, Bobby Miller, Drew Rasmussen. Here's a list of players that are currently out with arm injuries, of just pitchers: Felix Bautista, Kyle Bradish, Lucas Giolito, Garrett Cole, Jonathan Lasaga, Shane Boz, Shane McClanahan, Rasmussen, who I just mentioned, Shane Bieber. Through this list here, Justin Verlander currently out. I think Lance McCullers is hurt again. Shohei Ohtani, Jacob DeGrom, Max Scherzer, Robbie Ray.
Yeah, I mean, like, the biggest names in our sport.
That's just in the American League.
Yeah, that's just
the American League. Well, Shohei's in the National League, but here we come over to the National League: Clayton Kershaw, Emmett Sheehan, Spencer Strider, Brandon Woodruff. Through here, some prospects, Andrew Painter, the biggest pitching prospect that's currently out with it. Justin Steele currently has an injury.
Yeah.
Steven Strasburg has to freaking retire.
Literally has to retire.
Sandy Alcantara, Yuri Perez.
Yeah.
Kodai
Senga. We asked a question earlier. You said, what can we do? And I don't, you can't. What are you going to do? You get a ball if you throw over 100 miles an hour. Like, come on. And this is the ship has sailed on the velocity train. Like, that, the ship has sailed on the train.
I think it's time. Yeah. I think it's time that organizations really look at this and be like, okay, what do we have to do to, it's time to take a different organizational approach.
Right.
And
exactly.
Focus more on pitching the contact instead of the strikeout, like we saw in the 90s and early 2000s. Because you didn't have this then. You didn't have this kind of stuff. Like, you had your guys that threw high 100s, but, you keep these guys healthier and they can pitch longer too.
Yeah, I think it's got to start with our youth. I think it's got to start with the way they're valuing what these prospects can do and whether or not you think that these high school kids should be throwing that hard. And are the coaches pushing them too hard? Are they putting themselves, are the expectations to be the next, Max Clark, to be the next, Wyatt Langford, to be the next young guys that are coming up and going to blast the ball, that was hitters. But my point, I guess, is you know, young player becoming the superstar, like being that young guy who doesn't go through the system the way some of the older prospects have gone through, but are coming up into the show when they're 20, you know, 21. And it's the same for pitchers too. We got to be really careful that we're not putting the expectations so high that it's just forcing these people to, you know, go after them regardless if it's good for their body or not.
Yeah, it's, again, there's nothing that can really be done. It's got to be all of baseball has to look at this and figure out how they're going to protect their price.
And they can't blame each other. The players can't blame baseball, and baseball can't blame the players. Like, they have to come together on this.
That's going to happen.
That's, yeah, unfortunately.
There's going to be no solution. That's what's going to happen. But real solutions are going to have to start at the parental level when these kids are younger.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, explain to your kid, hey, you want to throw high 90s, go for it, but this is what can happen.
Same can be said about football and concussions. I mean, it's the idea that you've got to play safer from a younger age. We have learned the lessons of what happens when you don't. Learn the lessons. Look, think about the history, like, just in general. Like, we should be doing that more often.
It's rough to see because, you know, I hate the Braves. I absolutely hate the Braves, but I think Spencer Strider is a fantastic pitcher and a fantastic human being. He handled the Philadelphia crowd well and has handled the fan base well. And, you know, as great as it is for the Phillies, he's going to be out for the year. It absolutely sucks that he's going to be out for the year, that we're not going to see another Wheeler Strider game this year.
Right.
And, like, who even knows if he's going to come back and be the same player? Like, this is a dude that rely strictly on velocity to get dudes out. Who knows if he comes back as the same player? You know, Yuri Perez, I love Yuri Perez. It sucks that he's going down for the year. It's a shame. And, you know, I don't know what can be done. You know, I remember when guys, we're not going to see 200 inning players anymore. You know, that's just not going to be a thing anymore. But, you know, I remember when guys like Roy Halladay, you know, every time he went to the mound, I always thought, hey, man, this could be a complete game with ease. You know, Cliff Lee was another one of those guys. You know, all those guys from the early 2000s, you know, were just fantastic to watch. You know, Lee, Halladay, CeCe Sabathia, early Verlander. Kershaw. Yeah,
now guys get into the seventh, and you're like, this is a rarity. What are you pitching in the seventh for? And guys like Sandy Alcantara, they're gone. Like, he's out for the season. He was the only one doing complete games all last year. So
Framber Valdez was doing it too, and he's hurt.
I suppose, you know? Yeah.
It's
just the games are changing a little bit, I think, from, you know, in all different places.
And it's interesting how it's affected the old guard too, that didn't necessarily throw hard, but through a lot of innings.
Verlander and DeGrom and all them. You know,
the question is there just a specific amount of pitches you can throw over your lifetime? I mean, I don't know.
And is there an element of bad luck? Is it simply just each body's different and the weight is all different and everything is just different? Is it one bad pitch? I don't know.
There's no easy fix, but, you know.
Either way, I think we both can agree, unfortunately, this list is not going to get any smaller by the end of the season.
And I don't even want to think about who's going to be next. You know.
But we'll be talking about it if it does happen, because, you know, this conversation, Pandora's box, has been opened at this point.
Yeah, and it's going to be interesting to see what is done to fix things and, you know,
where it
goes. Are we going to go back to an offensive-heavy MLB with players? Because, look, pitching rules baseball right now.
1,000%.
And I think we're going to see a pretty big increase in offense this year with the amount of, like, star-level pitching injuries we've seen.
Yep, that, and then the increase of people getting used to the base paths and the larger bases and stealing and all the other things that goes into the whole process. So, yeah, I agree. I think that offense is going to be continually changing throughout this whole season based on pitchers and what that looks like.
Moving on, let's get into everyone's favorite umpire.
Oh, yes. Everyone's favorite.
Good old Angel Hernandez.
Every season, man. Every single one. What the heck?
I assume you want to talk about the Wyatt Langford at bat.
Yes, I do. the three strikeouts all or the three strikes all outside of the strike zone,
like 6 inches out of the strike zone. Disgusting.
Dude. If
like,
if you look at the most impactful missed calls of the game from the umpire scoreboard, all of them, all three of them are the exact same at bat with Wyatt Langford, top of the fourth inning, France to Langford, 1, 2, 3, like those three pitches, just awful.
Like miserable. how are you that bad? Like,
well, how are you that bad consistently that bad to the point where you're being left off of postseason assignments and everything else, and your job's only protected because of the union that you're in, and that there should be no chance that you even are sniffing these assignments, let alone year after year after year after year. It's disgusting. He had a 78% called strike accuracy for that game. 78. Like, what world are we playing in where it's just like, it's fine. Wait for your next rotation.
He just doesn't care.
Like, he doesn't care. He gives nothing. Like, I want to start swearing so bad in this segment because, like, this guy is just terrible for baseball. You know you're going to get just an awful game when he's behind the plate. It's just almost a 2-run favor for Houston in the game. And they still lost.
Yeah, they still lost. He's horrible for the game. And
it's just, I mean, he's 61, so in theory, or 62, he's 62, so 3 more years. I mean, how long was Joe West in there before he retired?
Oh, he was there for a while.
Too long is the answer, but my point is that he's going to stay there until he decides that he's done, and we already know he has a huge ego, and he's prideful as all get out because of the whole suing the league and everything else get in there, so I don't think we're getting rid of Angel Hernandez any point soon. All we can hope for is this challenge system making its way into the league sooner than later. At least that's my personal opinion.
Moving on from Angel Hernandez, Jackson Holliday was called up.
We're not talking about the challenge system, huh? That's fair. No, we've beat that up already. We've beaten it up. I just think that's the next thing.
Like, I'm all for it.
You have to keep these people accountable. You have to hold them accountable. And the only way to do that is to make them stand up and say, they're challenging my bad play. And then they get overruled. And maybe they'll think about it the next time before they do it. But
no, we definitely need it.
Got it. And they're doing it in bigger profile games. We've talked about it already on the show, but like spring breakout games were used with this challenge system. Like, they've got to improve the quickness of it. But we see it in all of these other major sports already. Like, tennis has a major challenge system. Like, you can just be like, that was wrong. And they go, yep, you're right. That was wrong. Yep. So let's just do it. Just be over with. Rip the Band-Aid off. Let's get used to it.
Yeah, we need it.
So there's my rant on that.
There we go. Moving on. Jackson Holliday, the top prospect in baseball, was called up this week. Slow start for him. He got his first hit yesterday,
I believe it was today. Against the Crew. And actually a pretty clutch situation. He was in the seventh inning, and there's a runner on first, and he was able to get him to third on a pretty good slap to right field. But, 1-for-15 to start with 9 Ks. It's not exactly what you want for him. I think there's probably a little bit of pressure. They show every single game that he's there that his dad is like right front and center, right next to him. Yeah. Not that he hasn't had his dad as a pressure person on him his entire career. But there's got to be a hefty amount, especially with the whole being sent down at the beginning of the season. That was just weird. I don't really know why they did that. I don't know if they did him any favors. Like, what was he going to learn in Nofer for 2 weeks? Like, come back up and, just get ready to play. I don't think he's going to be a problem for him. I think he's, number one prospect for a reason, and he's going to be great. But it is interesting to see what happens when the pressure is on a little bit, but it's small sample size.
But the Oriole that's been impressing me, the Cow, Colton Cowser.
I picked him up on my fantasy team off the waiver. I'm like, this guy has been just cranking the ball.
So there was a lot of talk about him coming in this year that like he had a hole in his swing and that he wouldn't be able to figure it out and would strike out too much. He, short sample size, but he might have figured it out.
Yeah, certainly does. That man's got some power. And
like his new swing, because it seems like he adjusted his swing, very similar to Bryce Harper's swing.
Yeah, he had another homer today. I mean, the guy's
four straight games he's
crunching. Home. Yeah, he's looking good. I
see a lot of like Bryce Harper's swing in him.
I mean, that's a hell of a comp. I'm sure he would probably like that.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not saying he's Bryce Harper, but that the swing is very, very similar.
Yeah, no, that Oriole team is going to be incredible. Their prospects are incredible. If you look at the stat lines from Norfolk, like those guys are just disgusting. It's like, what in the world are we doing? These guys could probably beat most of the starting players for Oakland at this point in their AAA team. So, Baltimore's going to be great for a long time.
Yeah. I'm just going to keep with this. We'll just talk about individual players and I'll get into some other stuff. Shota Imanaga has had a great start to his year.
Yeah, unfortunately for me, because I'm a Brewers fan, but yeah, just great. Just fun
to
watch.
Very impressive. And I don't think a lot of people thought he looked this good.
No, I don't think so.
Compared to Yamamoto.
Yeah, exactly. So if that was the focus on Yamamoto, and he's kind of like, well, I'm a 31-year... No, he's 30. Imaga's 30. But yeah, first three starts, 15 and a half, third innings, 16 strikeouts, 0.00 ERA through three. I mean,
pretty good.
Pretty good. Two road starts maybe out of there. At least this one today was a road start. So good for them. One yesterday.
Yeah, very, very good for him. Especially against the Dodgers, he looked really good against them.
Yeah, the Cubs, like every other team, they need starters right now. I think they just signed Julio Teheran. Did I see that correctly?
Yes, I believe they did.
I mean, that's a Craig Council move, obviously, because he's got that, he knows what to get out of him with him being in Milwaukee last year. Like, you need somebody, especially with Steele down and like the bullpen as bad as it is in Chicago. Like, they've got to at least have some veteran starter to try to get five innings eaten up. So, but we'll see.
Definitely a good start for him. Trevor Story is injured again.
Can't catch a break, dude.
He broke a bone I never heard of before.
Yeah, that was I don't even know that you told me about it, and I had to like look it up, and I was, you know, I don't even know where it is right now on my notes, but it's the basically inside of the shoulder blade, like where your humerus attaches.
Yeah, so it's basically strained the ligament and
the glenoid rim. That's what it's called. Yeah.
And because he strained it, he broke it at the same time. So like, he went to dive for a ball. He strained it as he was diving for the ball, and then when he landed, because of the strain, he broke it.
Right, it was like a full Superman, backwards.
The most freak thing I've ever seen.
Yeah. I don't even know what the player was right next to him, but he was just like immediately like hands over mouth, like, oh man. And he's just writhing. And I was like, God, $140 million contract, 6 years. He's in the third year of it. Like we said earlier before the show, he may not even be able to play again if the shoulder injuries are killer for infielders. Like, what are you supposed to do with your power going across the field now or across the diamond? Right. Like, nope.
Yeah, not good for him. Not good for the Red Sox, who are, I think they spent their last day over 500.
Yeah, I mean, Cora's message is like next guy up, but that's not going to work very long. Like, you can say that all you want.
Unless you're calling Marcelo Meyer up, but
yeah. Oh, and then that's the other thing too. Do you make a knee jerk reaction, and because you have a hurt player to, you know, or do you just throw in your season and be like, well, that's tough cookies. Right. That's, you know, the best we can do.
Yeah, you know, so they're 9-7 currently. Okay, they're still over 500.
They're still over 500, so they got two games to play with.
Yeah, sure, but I think Meyer might be ready to come up. I mean, okay. He's looked good in AA this year. I mean, obviously, you want to get him to AAA and see what he can do, but
yeah, they're starting to skip that more and more often, though, right?
Yeah, he's looked pretty good. So, you know, maybe he's ready to come up soon. I don't know.
Nope.
You don't have many options left. You're honestly running out of shortstops.
Yeah. Yeah, ain't that the truth? Maybe they should have held on to Xander.
You know, maybe. But then again, Xander, you know.
Yeah, he's getting up there, though.
Yeah.
Maybe they should have held on to Mookie. That's what we probably should be saying.
That's the one that they should have done.
Yeah, that's the one. I mean, God bless.
Mookie's probably going to win another MVP.
No, seriously, he's head and shoulders everyone already in the first 2 weeks of the season. I'm just like, okay.
The dude learned shortstop.
Yeah, literally. Just like, oh, you want to be a shortstop? Okay.
Dude, like, he never played it before. And they're like, can you play short? Gavin Lux kind of sucks. Yeah, sure, I'll play short. And he's already put up like, he's already over one WAR.
Yeah, freak athlete.
He's unbelievable. Freak two-way player because he's a bowler too.
Yeah, let's forget his multiple perfect games.
Great bowler.
Yeah.
Like, here's the thing, man. As a fellow bald person, people need to respect the power that being bald has. Mookie Betts is bald. Well, the one of the best hitters in baseball. Zach Wheeler, bald. Probably the best remaining pitcher in baseball right now, because everyone else is dead. Don't underestimate the power of the bald man. The bald don't man do knows it. What you're doing. Don't underestimate us. We may not have hair, but
we know how to manipulate the ball.
We make up for it all.
There you go. So I wish I was a good bowler. I could barely crack
my 100. Look, every bald dude I know is a fantastic bowler. So,
all right.
You know, either they're good at pool or they're good at bowling.
Yeah, what's with that about? What's that skill set?
Yeah, pretty fantastic.
Oh, well, a little jealous, but, you know, it's all right.
Mike Trout is off to a great start.
I think he heard me talking about him a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, top 50 all-time in B-War now, 86.4.
Pretty great.
Look, man, like, I'm glad he's healthy. I'm glad he's producing. Get him the hell off the Angels.
Yeah, right? 6 home runs and 8 RBIs.
Yeah.
I guess nobody else is on base.
It's time to ask out Trout. It's time to ask out.
Look, I get it. You want to be the face of your organization. You've been there for forever, and you feel like loyalty to that, especially after Shohei leaving.
And, like, to be fair, the West looks like it's kind of dog pissed this year. I mean, the A's are currently third in it, so
right.
That's kind of, but I think the Rangers are going to take off and pull away with it.
Yep,
like, just get off that team, man. Ask out. Come home to Philly. We want you here.
Did you see his wife announced he's going to have another kid?
Yes.
So that's pretty cool. Don't
come raise him in the best city on the East Coast. Not Atlanta, not New York, Philadelphia. Come raise him in Philadelphia.
Come here. Him and Bryce Harper on the same team? Like,
dude, and like, they're best friends. Like, let's get it to happen, man. Like, that's kind of the dream duo you want to see.
Yeah, for all of us who are not fans of NL teams, but you know, here we are.
that's the dream duo.
That's get them together.
Ask Trout, ask out, because like, you're not going to see the playoffs this year if you don't ask.
Or that's not talking about this year, but just like the rest. You want you meaningful playoff run at any point in your professional career?
He's had one.
Get off the Angels.
One.
Yeah.
Come on. Like, it's sad, dude. Like.
You're literally being talked about as like the greatest, you know, modern baseball player. And you,
like, I genuinely think if he does not ask for a trade at the deadline or in the offseason, I'm convinced he does not care about winning. And he just wants to
placate the fans.
Yeah.
Art Moreno, what are you doing with your life?
But Hank, you know, come to Philly, man. Come to Philly. We want
you. You heard it here first, folks. He wants to go to Philly.
He's from here.
Well, there you go. Then that's all.
He's from across the bridge. He grew up in New Jersey. So,
all right.
Come to Philly. He's a big Eagles fan too, so you can catch Eagles games too.
It all makes sense. All lining up for you.
But man, yeah, what a career Trout has had. Like, and it's good to see that the injuries aren't bugging him yet this year. But like,
yeah, I remember a couple weeks ago I asked Naim, I'm like, do you think Angels fans are worried about that contract and like whether or not he's being valuable for it? And Naim reminded me, he's like, well, he's healthy. He's the best player in the league. I'm like, yeah, but you know, for the most part, yeah, he's pretty damn close up there. So yeah. Either way, it's good to see him being successful early. I hope he stays healthy. That's been the biggest thing for him. And, you know, it's still really, really early. Yep.
All right. So moving on, let's talk about some of my prospects to watch. I love minor league baseball. I love watching the next dudes come up. Okay. So I picked out 5 prospects to watch for over the next month. So number one, we're going to start with a Rockies outfield prospect named Jordan Beck. He's ranked number 74 on MLB Pipeline. Off to a great start. In Triple A, he's at Albuquerque. So he's hitting .306, .417 on base, .714 slugging percentage in 13 games. He's got 4 home runs, 13 driven in, and the big thing is his walk to K ratio has really improved. 10 walks to 14 Ks That was something he really had to improve on last year. And it looks like it's carried over this year. The dude's impressive.
Yeah. I mean, 22 years old, right? He's 6'2". 10
of his hits have gone for extra base hits, or 10 of his 15 hits have been extra base hits.
I mean, you'd like to think that the Rockies, as terrible as they've been for as long as they've been, you would start getting a decent farm system built up. But good for them, I guess. Jordan Beck, hey? 22, 6'2", 22, right-hander. Okay. We'll see what happens.
Yeah, definitely a dude to watch out for. He's definitely impressed me here early on.
Yeah, it looks like he's projected to make the league next year, hey?
I think he'll be up this year. I wouldn't be shocked if he's fast-tracked. Simply because of the start he's off to in AAA. It's been very good. So, you know, it wouldn't shock me if he comes up and, you know, if mid-season he's higher on some prospect list. Definitely a fun dude to watch for. Number two here on my list. We're going to the Phillies farm system. George Klassen. So this dude's not even ranked on any lists, but his start has just been very impressive. So through two games, he's 2-0, 10 innings pitched, 17 strikeouts, 2 walks. He has a wicked fastball that can hit triple digits. Really nice curveball, really nice slider, really nice changeup. The big thing was they were concerned about his control, but it looks like early on the control is looking good. So he is a dude that I think is going to fly up the Phillies prospect lists and possibly make a few top 100 lists in the high 90s.
Okay. It's always good to have those guys in your system.
It's nice because, you know, we've been needing to develop more prospects properly. So, you know, if this guy can work out, that's awesome. You know, Orion Kerkering was the last prospect to fly up the system last year. He pitched at every single minor league level. I don't think this guy's going to pitch at every single minor league level, but he is 22. They got him in the sixth round last year. And, you know, just off to a really good start. So,
very
excited
nice
to see what he can do.
Yeah, it reminds me of Jacob Mizorowski in the Brewers system. He's 31 in the top 100 now. He's basically going to be lighting the world on fire, I think, this year for the most part. He's only had one innings pitched so far since he was coming off of an injury, but he had 3 strikeouts in that one inning. So I think it's a matter of time before we see him coming up through the Brewers system. He had a breakout prospect all-star, what's the showcase last year during the All-Star break. So I think that's somebody you're going to see a lot coming up through our system. And I hope he can profile as a starter. I really do. 6'7", just got some filthy stuff. Looks to be pretty much unhittable right now. So let's just see if that translates.
Yeah, I think because I'm going to get the next guy. This guy's also from the 2023 draft. Kyle Teal, the Boston Red Sox. Off to a really good start. He's a catching prospect. And it looks like he might stick at catching. He's a great hitter. 20 homer upside, they're saying. Guy that can hit 280 to 300. Really good start for him at AA. 5 games. Only 5 games, but he's got quite a few hits, a home run. And pretty impressive plate discipline. He's a guy that I really like. And it's going to be the next like big prospect coming up in that Boston system once Roman Anthony and those guys are up. And like in general, I think the 2023 draft class is going to be looked at as an all-timer because like Wyatt Langford's already in the majors.
Yep.
Paul Skeens is probably going to be in the majors this year.
Yeah, especially if the Pirates keep playing well. They're like, oh, yeah, we'll take this guy.
Yeah, there's... It's going to go down as an all-time draft class. Aiden Miller, a guy the Phillies drafted in the first round, has been super impressive as a high schooler. And he was a guy that they thought could be a top 10 pick, but you know, signability concerns were a concern. I think this draft class will be an all-timer when all is said and done. And you know, Kyle Teal's another guy to watch in that draft class. Next up in the Orioles farm system, Heston Kjerstad, 25 years old, but he's absolutely destroying the ball in AAA. And like they need to find a spot for him.
Yeah.
At AAA, he's hitting .361, .438 on base percentage, .770 slugging percentage, 7 home runs. I think that leads AAA right now. Dude's been impressive. And they need to get this dude a starting job in the majors. I think likely he's going to convert to first base.
Yeah, they can't keep him in the outfield, I don't think.
Yeah, he's not a good fielder. So I think he'll be a first base DH type guy because he's a bat first player. Or he's going to be traded. But this guy needs to be starting somewhere.
Yeah, I was going to ask, at what point do the Orioles, coming off the back of last season and the expectations of this season and early indications that their rotation might not be necessarily as good.
Yeah.
Where do you go? We have to make a choice at the deadline with some of their ridiculous prospects. Like, do you have too many? Like, what are you going to do with all of them?
They need to decide Kyle Stowers or Heston Kjerstad.
Yeah.
Both these dudes are destroying the ball in AAA. I think Kjerstad's going to be the pick because Stowers is 26. But like Stowers would be a starting outfielder on a lot of teams right now.
Yeah. It makes me wonder if either of them were in a conversation when Brewers were trading Corbin, although 1 year of Corbin for all of that year is not worth it. I mean,
Ortiz and DL Hall. Exactly. Is an awesome trade.
Oh, absolutely. If you look at it from years of control and possibility of upside on both of those guys, massive. But you can't tell me that the front office was probably not asking or at least trying to kick the tires around on one of these power hitting outfielders.
Oh, 1,000%. They definitely wanted one of them.
Yeah.
I think Stowers would have been ridiculous.
But Joey Ortiz is definitely showing that he wants to be part of this organization in a meaningful way. DL Hall, he'll get there, but he's got to figure out how to be a starter. And it's slow but sure. It's not going to be an overnight process.
Yeah. You know, Kjerstad was drafted 2nd overall back in 2020. You know, I think it's time that he gets to the majors, you know, whether it be with the Orioles or he's traded somewhere. I think he's going to be traded somewhere, personally. Right now, he's ranked number 30 on MLB Pipeline. He's the 3rd, 4th ranked Orioles prospect. But he's number 30 on Pipeline overall, and he's the 4th ranked prospect.
Yep. Jackson Holliday won't count for too much longer, but
yeah, yeah. Holliday will come off, and then that'll make Basalo number 1.
Yep.
And, you know, Basalo is
Kobe Mayo.
If you've never heard of Samuel Basalo, get to know him because he's going to be absolutely ridiculous. And he's probably going to convert to first base.
He's a catcher first baseman, so they're going to run out of space for him. But he's only 19.
He's 19 in AA. And last year he ripped the cover off the ball. So, you know, he's a guy that I definitely am a huge fan of. And he's going to make an impact in that system. Last prospect. This is a guy that I think is the shortstop of the future in Tampa Bay. Carson Williams. Ranked 19 on Pipeline. He's going to be top 5 come mid-season, end of season. Especially with Holliday, Churio, and Carter graduating.
Mm-hmm.
I think when a mid-season update happens, this dude's going to be top 5. Just destroying the ball in AA right now. .444 average, .516 OBP, .704 slugging. Really impressive. Discipline. The dude steals bases. He's got good power. And, you know, the big concern was, you know, the power's there, but can you really develop the hit tool further and hit for contact?
Right.
Looks like he's starting to do that.
He's got a ridiculous arm. They think he might have been a pitching prospect, so he can throw 95. Like, that's a hell of a thing for a shortstop to be able to gun across the infield.
Yeah, he's impressive. You know, I think the Rays are going to be in good shape here. You know, Wander Franco going away. You know. Yeah, don't like to say his name. He who shall not be named going away.
Yep, there you go.
For good. You know, everyone thought it was a death blow to franchise. I think Caminero, Carson, and Meade is going to make for a good infield. And Meade has looked pretty solid in the majors this year so far. And I think they're going to start giving him more at-bats and more starts. And, you know, Caminero, you know, he had an injury, but, you know, he's torching the ball for Durham. He was actually in town in the Valley this week. I didn't get a chance to see him play, which I'm bummed because he hit a home run today. And that's the only time Durham comes to the Valley this year. But Carson Williams is a dude to watch for. I think he's going to be up this year. Everyone says 2025. I think he'll be up this year, especially if he keeps doing what he's doing.
Yeah, I mean, the Rays had 99 wins last year, right? So
they did, and they're not looking as good this year.
But they're still spending what, less money? More money?
Less money. They don't
$120 million payroll? That's nothing.
Oh, yeah.
That's peanuts.
Oh, yeah.
But it does give me hope for my team. You know, if an organization can be probably as good as the Rays with just good management and good GMing and good whatever else, then maybe it can happen for me.
Definitely.
Can hope.
So those are my prospects to watch for. So now we're going to get into, you know, just to round things up, some early reactions to power rankings, division standings. And we're going to start with, do you buy it?
Cool.
So I'm going to throw out some stats at you. I'm going to see if you buy it.
Okay.
Start with Ellie De La Cruz. He's hitting 314, 386 OBP, 667 slugging, 178 OPS plus. He has massively cut down on the strikeouts. Do you buy that the breakout is coming?
That this to say it, but I absolutely do buy it. The man plays with more energy than I've ever seen out of any player. He's got the clubhouse right where he needs it, meaning he's feeding off of them and the energy and the young team that's getting up. I've watched him inside the ballpark home run on the Brewers the other week. He's hitting for power, speed. Young gun. I do buy it. Unfortunately, I do.
Yeah. So like I'd say, like as far as like non-Phillies, Ellie De La Cruz is definitely in my top three favorite players in baseball.
Like, absolutely. He's a gazelle. Like running him, watching him running around, it's just insane. Like, just insane.
He's electric. He's fun to watch. He's fantastic, man.
And you already mentioned the big knock was his strikeout for last season. So if he's cutting down on that and if he's able to not flail around at strikes outside the zone, then
and maybe like the speed is ridiculous. And he started bunting for hits as well, which is like a great way to take advantage of your speed.
Mm-hmm.
But like the power this dude has at shortstop as a switch hitter.
I was about to say, people forget he's a switch hitter. I don't know how they forget, but so they
When he came up last year, I compared him to Giancarlo Stanton at shortstop with Ronald Acuna Jr.'s speed.
Yeah.
And like that's pretty accurate for what he is.
I'd say so.
Like, absolutely. The dude's huge, and, like, when he makes contact, like, his advanced metrics are insane.
Yeah.
If you ever get a chance, look at his Savant page, because, like, man, he hits the ball, and it's
it just keeps going.
Yeah.
And to all parts of the field, too. So, why? It's fine. It's fine. It's good for baseball, and that's most important for me.
Yeah. Next up, so this player has no home runs. He's hitting 255. He's hitting 367 on base percentage, 314 slugging. His team is projected to have 100 wins this year and just run away with their division. Can you tell me who this player is?
Julio Rodriguez or Wyatt Langford?
It is Ronald Acuna Jr.
Oh, all right.
He is off to a very slow start.
Yeah. You say zero home runs?
No home runs.
Oh, man. I know Julio doesn't have any home runs, but that's still crazier over there.
He has not hit anything. I don't buy that this is what he's going to be. Like, the dude just won MVP.
Absolutely not.
But, you know, it's a little shocking that this is how he's looked to start the year.
Yeah. Like, what do you do in your off season that causes you to have such a, I mean, it's only 2 weeks, and again, 162 it's only two games. Weeks, but
you know,
you still expect him to completely just.
So the do you buy it goes down to the Braves and the Phillies. Do you think this division is going to be closer with Strider gone now and the early struggles for Acuna?
Oh yeah, definitely, without a doubt. I think that the Phillies will continue to get stronger and stronger as they get more healthy. The Mets are going to be a dumpster fire all season long. Marlins, ha! So yeah, I really do think it's going to be a 2-horse race, and I think the Phillies are going to be the early favorite.
So which goes to the next player, 190, 277, 674. He's been dealing with a back injury. that wasn't really a big deal is made about it, but it might be time to start making a big deal about it, especially for the long-term health of his career. He named this player.
It's not Yelich, because he's batting much better than that, but he's out with a back injury right now. Without Googling, I couldn't tell you. Tell me.
Bryce Harper.
Bryce Harper, of course it is. Yeah, he's notoriously back problems. Isn't that the reason? Oh, his shoulder is the reason he can't field anymore. But
well, he's playing first, and he looks like an absolute Gold Glover at first.
Well, then you're good. That's why we have Hoskins on our team. Yeah. Not to make it that's, a rough subject.
That's literally why you have Hoskins. Hoskins would have been a lifetime fill had Harper not said, I'm going to stay at first.
And gotten a massive contract to do so. But
yeah,
it's Bryce Harper. Come on.
It's Bryce Harper. So one of the big concerns with Bryce's career was his swing and how it would affect him later in his career. Comparisons to Tiger Woods was how on Tiger Woods' backswing, he'd hit his back with the club. On Bryce's backswing, he hits his back with the bat.
It is really unprecedented the way he swings that thing.
Yeah, it's wild the way. So, you know, I'm slightly concerned. This isn't like Bryce to start like this, and he's clearly frustrated. Like he's at times smoking the ball, but it feels like it's not hard enough, like what we're used to seeing from him. I've always been really concerned that he would start having back problems like David Wright, and I'm worried that the back injury that he was dealing with in spring training has affected him into the regular season. I still think we're going to get a typical Bryce Harper season out of him. I don't like that he has started hitting 190.
Yeah, and stiffness is such a weird thing to say about the back, because the back, as you know, is just so completely interconnected, and stiffness could be a result of anything. It could be a disc problem. It could be just you having arthritis. It could be whatever. Who knows what it is? But stiffness, I mean, like I said, the Brewers are dealing with the exact same thing. Yelich is off to a torrid start, and all of a sudden he smokes a double to start the game, and now they pull him after one at bat, and it's back soreness, and now he's going to go to the IL, and it's always the back with these guys. Back. And as someone who has a back injury in his life, like, it's debilitating as all get out. I can't imagine trying to play a professional sport with a bag that just won't cooperate with you. So I think you have every right to be concerned. I think every Philly fan should be definitely looking at this and being like, we're talking about this now.
I'm not pushing the panic button yet.
No, of course not.
But I'm concerned. Now, the player I am pushing the panic button on is Nick Castellanos, who's hitting 190, 266 OBP, 456 OPS.
Yeah.
He does not look good. He's chasing everything. He's not even hitting the ball hard. Like, I don't even think he has a barrel yet this season. He's not looked good. The feeling's not getting any better. And I do wonder if Castellanos is going to get moved on from in the offseason.
What's his contract situation like?
He's got 2 years left. $20 million each.
Okay.
Warber's got 1 year left. $18 million on it at the end of the year. Something like that. Look, I love Nick. Nick Castellanos was one of my favorite players in baseball. I love this dude. He has brought an energy to the Phillies as a person that the team needed. Same with Kyle Schwarber. Like, the leadership both these dudes brought to the Phillies. Like, they made the World Series their first year with the two of them on it. I am definitely concerned about how Castellanos has looked, because this goes back to the playoffs last year. And really, the Phillies lineup in general, Brandon Marsh and Trey Turner are the only dudes delivering. And Trey Turner just hit his first home run of the season today. Like, I'm definitely worried about Trey Turner's fielding. But, like, Brandon Marsh has been the dude delivering in this lineup, and no one else has. It's been a very slow start. Now, granted, they are 8-8, which is an awesome, like, I'm glad they're at least 8-8, but I'm definitely concerned, because it seems like they're going for this all-or-nothing approach, where it's either I hit the ball out of the park, or I do nothing at all. And this was the problem that was seen in the playoffs down the line at the end. Because it was that approach that the Diamondbacks were able to take advantage of and put them down.
Yeah, I always look at the first couple weeks of baseball and I have the same, where I have a measured approach, but at the same time, like, I do feel that these are relevant games to the rest of the season. Obviously, there's 162 games of them and 14 is only 14 of them. But it's how you start is the momentum into the next phase of the season. And you've got to be able to be successful, at least in some part, to start the year. Otherwise, there's a mental side of this game that not as many people talk about, as well as the physical side of it. So if you're batting 0-for-2, essentially, in that circumstance, you're in pain and you've got mental struggles when it comes to your performances. Like, it's not going to go well. And it's just not obviously just a Philly specific thing. You can apply this to anybody who isn't the Dodgers, essentially. But I think that we talk about it even with my team and all these other teams too. We see these starts of the seasons, but I don't know what I'm trying to say here. I'm rambling. I think you have a very good point to be worried about some of these things, but I also think that you understand that we can get through this too. That it's going to be the other side. That May will be a little bit different than April, and June will be different than May. My concern
comes from this was supposed to be the easiest stretch of the season for
them. From a scheduling standpoint, for sure. From a scheduling
standpoint, like, this is an easy start of the year for them because they get the Rockies and the White Sox this week. And if they're not sweeping those two series, I'm concerned.
Yep, I would be. Those guys are absolute dumpster fires. They're like, I'd say the White Sox are the worst team in baseball, and Rockies are like second worst, maybe third.
All right, and then to wrap this up, I'm going to just give some teams and get your, do you buy it?
Sure.
So first one I have here, the Pirates, 11-5.
I'm going to
playoff team.
No, they've traditionally been great in April and then been terrible. Let's see, what did they do? What did Pirates do in April of last year? It was something really, really good. I don't have it up in front of me, but they were 20-9 through 29 games and they finished in third place. And no, I don't think the Pirates have staying power. Are they good? Is McCutchen coming back, hitting his 300 home run? Fantastic. Is Rowdy Tellez at first place playing with Connor Joe over there? Great. Paul Skeens coming up? Cool. All of those guys, yes, they may be good down the road, but I don't think that their start, even though they're not in first, Brewers are, I don't think they're going to stick around for long. So that's my opinion anyway. Maybe I'm biased, though.
All right. The
Cardinals, what do you think? What do you think, Pat?
Do I buy it? They're going to be the third wild card team.
Okay, there we go.
I'm all in on them.
Okay.
Especially when Skeens gets up, I think come end of the season, we're going to be talking about Skeens, Jones, Keller as a top three rotation in baseball.
God, I hope you're wrong.
They've still got Bubba Chandler and Anthony Solomento coming through that system too. I think end of season, we're talking Skeens, Jones, Keller as like in a top 5, 1, 2, 3 in baseball.
Well, I guess they're not going anywhere anytime soon. So I think there's a reason that they're in the top third of most people's power charts right now. So I keep an eye on their scores every single day because they're, battling right now.
Cruz and Cabrian Hayes look like they're going to another level this year.
Yeah, those guys are fast. Those are fast, fast, fast.
Next up, the Cardinals, 7-9. Last place in the Central.
They'll stay down there.
I think so, too.
I think so. They have an ancient, decrepit starting pitching.
Arenado looks cooked. He does not look good.
Nope.
Sorry, Naeem, but Cardinals.
Goldschmidt is their only bright side on that entire organization.
Like, Jordan Walker, dude just smashes the ball into the ground.
Yeah.
Like, I genuinely think Walker needs to go back to AAA and figure out how to lift the damn ball.
Cardinals have got 6 games coming up against the Brewers and the Diamondbacks. I think it'll go a long way to see where they're at.
Yeah, that's definitely going to be a determining factor.
Yep.
Next up here, going to keep it in the National League. Who has the better record, the Nationals or the Marlins?
I believe the Nationals do, but it's not by much.
Who
Oh, so, you're saying who finishes? Oh, the Nationals for sure. Finishes, Marlins are going to flirt with historic bad. They're going to flirt whatever the record is for the worst season of all time. I don't know what off the top of my head, but they are going to flirt with that. They are.
So this is fun.
Awful.
The Marlins are currently 3-13 to start the year, and the White Sox are 2-13.
Yeah.
Nats are 6-9, but have James Wood coming up later this year.
There's no chance that.
I think the Nationals finish below the Marlins.
They've been a dumpster fire for years. What was the name of their executive that they fired?
Kim NG.
That's right. And they've just been miserable ever since after flirting with the playoffs. Like, what is wrong with you? Ugh, just awful. Awful, awful everything. Expand the league, get rid of them. I don't know, do something. Can we just move them? Can we just not? It's frustrating. Sorry, Miami fans, if you're out there. I know there's not a lot of you, but.
And then going over to the AL real quick, the Astros, 6-11, last place in the West. Do you buy that this is what they are?
No, I think it's bad luck to start the season. I think they had a Yankee team come in who was ready to prove that they weren't as bad as people were saying they were. Josh Hader's got to get used to his new team. Yordan Alvarez is still one of the best batters in the entire league. I think they'll be fine. I don't think they're that bad. Do I think they win the division? Probably not, but it's going to be close. So, no, I don't buy that this is who they are.
The Royals at 10-6, second place in the Central.
I like the Royals a lot. I'm a big fan of Bobby Witt Jr.
I love Bobby Witt Jr.
I love the Royals in general. I think that they're coming up. They played the ball the right way. They show a great blueprint for a team that just wants to win and is going to do it with youth and speed and exuberance. I'm a big fan of everything they do, and they still have guys like Perez that are still leading the way and just showing us what a consummate veteran is. So, yeah, I buy everything about the Royals for sure.
Definitely. All right. So we don't have any power rankings here for this week yet. Because I know we wanted to dive in that, but it doesn't look like there's anything out yet.
No.
So instead, what I'm going to do to wrap up this podcast, catching a valuable home run. So Otani and Soto, they hit their first for their new team. Andrew McCutchen hit his 300th home run today. So say you were to catch one of these home runs, what would you do?
I think I'm going to take the risk of not giving it to them and not getting it authenticated in order to try to sell it for lots of money. Because I think that's what you need, especially if, well, I don't know. I hate to say it if I'm a fan of that team, but Ohtani's ball, if that can get me like six figures, I don't want a signed bat. I want money. I'm sorry. Yeah. I could use it and pay off some debt. Like, that's just fair. give me the money at this point. So maybe that makes me a little jaded. Maybe it's making it a true fan. I think they'll get it back eventually, and then they have a lot of money to do so. So I'm going to take care of my family.
So it would depend. If I caught, say I caught Bryce Harper's 300th home run, I'm getting the dude the ball, but I'm negotiating. I'm
right.
Gonna be like, look, man, I want season tickets. I want a signed bat, signed jersey, and season. And I need the season tickets. Season tickets, signed bat, signed jersey. That ball's yours.
Yeah. Did you notice it was a Pirate fan who caught McCutchen's in Philly today?
Yeah. Yes, that was awesome. I'm glad.
I was like, oh, it's a sea of red, and the guy in the Buccos uniform got it with his kid.
That was awesome.
Yeah.
If it's someone for a team that I don't follow, or I like, but I'm not close to, so like Juan Soto, I don't live in I like the Yankees, but I don't live in New York. Say I did catch his home run, I would negotiate with him to get it, but I think I definitely want,
Was there any story? I heard that they basically, he told security he wasn't interested, but I don't know what happened after that.
I believe the fan kept it.
Yeah, unlike the Shohei situation. Although I've seen a bunch of pictures of Shohei now meeting with that fan afterwards because he was kind of getting dragged a little bit because he didn't actually meet them, even though he said
he did. Yeah, I'd want to meet the player.
Like, yeah.
Now, if it's a player,
maybe I'm
just
jaded, I guess.
If it's a player I don't care for, a team I don't like say... Say Ronald Acuna Jr. hit a home run that like broke a record or something.
Or
like
during
that.
Judge's AL record pursuit, when every homer that he was hitting.
If I caught Judge's ball, I'm selling that.
Oh, immediately. That was, yeah. That, baseball history.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I guess it really depends on how special the ball is.
It depends on the player. It depends on how special the ball is. It depends on the team.
Yeah. And there's, like, there's only so many records left in baseball to be broken from that perspective. Yeah. So it's something to be said about that.
Yeah. But definitely an interesting thought process is what you would do.
Well, I found a power ranking from SportsNot. I don't really know what...
We got something.
We got something.
How absurd is it?
All right. It's not crazy absurd. So basic rundown, we've got 30th place is the White Sox.
Makes sense.
I'm not going to dive into too much more than that, although we already know that. Marlins come in behind them, and the Rockies and the Athletics round out the bottom. Nationals, Giants. This is going in, obviously, in ascending order.
Yep.
Angels are at 24. Mets are at the 23. So that's up two spots. So they won a game by like 16 runs or something. So they get a little bit of sympathy points, I think. Cardinals at 22, Twins at 20, and then Royals are at, it doesn't really matter. They're tied with the Twins. I don't know how you can do that, but yeah, I guess that
makes sense, but okay.
Whatever, they're both at 20. Mariners at 19, Red Sox at 18, Padres 17, Reds 16, Jays 15, Tigers 14. What do we think about the Tigers? Do we think the Tigers are for real?
I mean, the Tigers. I think they've got something going there.
They're young, and they've got a lot of great pitching.
Yeah.
I think they could be good. Tampa, you were talking about, they're at 13. Pirates are at 12. Astros, also at 12. Again, what's with this weird two? You can't have
Astros
two.
At 11, sure.
Yeah, Astros at 11. Thank you, weirdness. Diamondbacks 10, Cubs 9, Phillies at 8.
Yeah.
Guardians at 7, Braves at 6. Brewers jump up from 12 all the way to 5 on the back of their 6-1 road trip. They almost swept the Baltimore Orioles today, and they haven't been swept. The Orioles have not been swept at home since May of 2022, and the Brewers are 3 innings away from doing it. So good for them. They look great. I love Pat Murphy's style of baseball, this stealing everything. They had a true hit and run today, and they had a stop steal where Sal Frelick was going between first and second just in order to get Blake Perkins to steal home. It was like they were watching baseball from the 80s.
Yeah.
Just so much fun to watch these young kids play. Rangers at 4, Orioles 3, Dodgers 2, Yankees 1.
I think I'd have the Dodgers 1.
Yeah, I think so too. That's exactly what I said.
Dodgers 1, Yankees 2.
Although the Dodgers bullpen, I mean, again, with a massive night from Yamamoto, Betts, Freeman, and they still blew it.
I definitely have concerns about the Dodgers bullpen.
Yeah. Not great. There. And what are they going to do with that?
Yeah. But
so
I think the Dodgers are still the team to beat.
Yep.
Until someone does it.
I guess we'll see.
So, NLDS.
Well, we'll discuss all those things and more in the next episode of Rain Delay Radio.
That's right. Yeah. That'll actually wrap it up because we've got everything. All right. Well, Kevin.
Yeah.
Thank you for joining me as always, man.
Of course, it was fun. I'm glad to be doing this a little more regularly again. It's been good.
Absolutely. It's good to have you back.
All right.
And thank you to everyone for listening. Rain Delay Radio is executive produced by Lewis. Our theme music is composed by Chuck Leese. My name is Patrick. I was joined by Kevin today. Rain Delay Radio releases usually every Monday morning around 1 a.m. Thank you for joining us, and we will see you next week. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.